I am so excited for this episode because I've been following Erin Brown for a long time, and it was great to finally chat with her. And you can kind of tell for those first 5 or 10 minutes, we're kind of getting to know each other, and then we settle in and have an incredible conversation, hitting on so many different topics. No matter what you come to the FitCast for, I think you're really going to love it. And I can tell, you know, after talking with her for an hour, I just already cannot wait to have Erin back on the show again. So I really hope you guys enjoy this episode. We get a ton of great topics, like I mentioned before. Please stick around. You are going to absolutely love it. Here it is. Hello and welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I got a hell of a show lined up for you today because I have someone on that I've been trying to track down for a while. Many of my guests over the last couple of months have just been telling me, Kevin, you got to talk to Erin Brown. And also, you know, I get the awesome side effects of course, following Girls Gone Strong and seeing a lot of stuff that you're doing. And unfortunately, I was not permitted. I tried to sneak into the Women's Fitness Summit. I was not permitted in. But this is my final. I have my opportunity to talk to Erin. Erin, how are you?
I'm so good. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm pumped to talk to you. Like I said, because as I've been like kind of following you behind the scenes, like using the internet to kind of stay up to date with what you're doing, and it's just great to finally be able to share, you know, your knowledge and your information with the FitCast audience, which I know just from making the announcement, they're incredibly pumped to hear from you. So, how you all know? I know we're recording this like a week before Christmas, and I don't know where you're at, but it is cold as hell right now in Massachusetts. Like we're basically locked into our houses with the weather.
It is cold, and I was just admitting that I unwrapped a Christmas present that I knew was a fuzzy hooded robe just so that I could wear it right now.
I wish I had that. I would.
Where I'm at.
I have like 6-inch thick like wool socks on right now, which is gonna, you know, help me maintain some homeostasis throughout the next couple days or so. But I digress. I want to start talking with you, and I think one of my favorite things to do is to, you know, when I have a guest on for the first time, is like one of the coolest questions I get to ask people is like how you found your way to where you are today, like, you know, being, you know, in the fitness industry and being someone that is doing incredible things and just really breaking some awesome ground when it comes to, you know, helping, whether it be fitness professionals, you know, like me out there, people that just really love doing this stuff. They just love to train and they just want to find a better way to do it, or, you know, a better way to deal with, you know, like our mental state when it comes to our goals and all that. How'd you find your way into this?
Totally by accident.
Awesome. That's what I love to hear.
So my Cliff's Notes story is my background is social work, and I was working as a social worker when I got pregnant with my daughter.
Love it.
And that was a really big game-changing moment for me. So having worked as a social worker and in childhood development, I had taught parenting classes and knew a lot about childhood development, and was overwhelmed at the thought of having a daughter for whom I would be her primary role model as her same-sex parent. And what I realized in that like very real life and death sort of moment of bringing a child into this world is that all I had to teach her about being a woman was how to hate herself. And so I started doing the painstaking work of dismantling how I had arrived there. And that involved looking at my history, looking at where I had learned that from, looking at how I talked to myself, and then progressed to how I cared for myself and what I was role modeling for her there. So that's how I got into fitness, was just as a means of self-care and trying to have a different experience in my body than hating it, trying to become embodied. Because I had done like fitnessy, I'm using air quotes, things before and gone on kicks where like I'm a runner now, or I'm doing this aerobics class, or I'm on this ridiculous diet. But all of that was just about fixing myself. And it had never occurred to me that that could be something that would be an important part of my life that I could enjoy, that would help with my mental health, with anything other than just fixing what I thought was flawed and wrong with my body. So I fell into that, trying to be a better role model for my daughter. And then had a significant change in my body, and people were asking about it. So I became organically a personal trainer that way. And after a couple years of doing that, realized that what I was doing with my clients and online was more about empowerment and reframing what we've learned to believe about our bodies and how we approach them. And so now I don't do training or teach the boot camps that I used to anymore, and have focused all of my energy on writing. But mm-hmm. even that was before like becoming a thing on the internet was really a thing anybody was trying to do. So that was an accident too.
I love that story because, you know, it's something that's front of mind for me right now. I'm actually putting together a presentation on, you know, kind of where I hope to see like the fitness industry going to a certain extent. And one of the things that comes up is, you know, I think some of the best coaches that I know are the ones that did kind of, you know, just almost by accident, you know, fell into the fitness industry. Like they saw the incredible benefits that, you know, certain aspects of fitness can have on them, and they wanted to share that with other people. And it is just kind of the thing that like a trend that I'm seeing. So many great coaches, like they didn't go to like school to do this. They didn't know they were going to do this like at 16. They weren't necessarily like the star at, like that was me. Like I wasn't the star athlete in high school. Like I was so unathletic and so out of like, quote unquote, out of shape, that I could almost, I could then see the benefits of fitness and wanted to share it with other people, I guess.
Well, I was actually really angry first with my fit friends and then with the fitness industry when I found out, myself, that it was so good for my mental health, that I could actually feel good yeah. whilst working out and get a boost of energy afterwards, that there was any benefit whatsoever to doing this stuff other than trying to make myself more beautiful in some way that someone else had determined for me. Right. That had literally never been brought to my attention. And I was like, why didn't anyone say anything? This is huge. And for me, it's the biggest benefit is that I don't struggle with depression in the same way that I used to, which is not a prescription for everyone. Of course, everyone's path is different. But managing the way that I care for myself, particularly with food and exercise, is a way that I can really keep my depression in a manageable place. And that's huge, hugely important information that didn't come up in therapy, that was never a part of, you know, I'm a college educated person. I took health classes. Why was this never a thing? And you're just so bombarded all the time with what the result is, which can be really not motivating when, as you know, the result portion of any fitness program is not instantaneous enough for that to be the sole reason you're there. In fact, that can be really aggravating at best.
Well, I mean, one of the topics that I wanted to talk to you about is, again, something that has been somewhat front of mind, and just to to discuss it with you is, you know, empathy, not just like empathy. I guess there's two big sides of this, and maybe there's actually more. Is empathy for ourselves as you know, human beings, and like you can even go into the aspect of being a fitness professional. It's like someone personally, like I don't have like a six pack. I don't look like, you know, the cover model, you know, kind of, you know, fitness coach or anything like that. But also having empathy for the people that we're trying to help. I see that as kind of almost like a generational gap between, and I don't want to generalize like that, but you know, you see a lot of coaches out there that still say, well, if you don't want to, and I know we're kind of separating, you know, kind of almost, you know, certain fitness goals and stuff, but, mm-hmm. you know, if you really don't want that, you know, goal that you have, if you haven't gotten there already, you know what I mean? Like if you're not willing to put in the effort and, you know, not go out and have that pizza with your friends or something like that, then I guess you really don't want it that much. Is this making any sense?
Yeah. Well, the idea that it's either excuses or results, like those are the only options in the world, which to me is so amazingly disrespectful of so many things. And the thing that I focus on primarily in my work is the way that we are socialized to feel about our bodies, particularly as women. And I know men are impacted by that as well. I just speak to my experience as a woman because I know that it is very specific and it is different. You know, the pressures on men are specific. And even if you were to say that it is the same and equal, which I'm not sure that I would agree with, there is something very different about telling someone to be small and telling someone to be big and powerful. You know, those are very different messages. So that's a lot to unpack. You know, and then on top of that, I would go so far as to say most, but the statistics that we have are that 1 in 4 women is sexually assaulted, which we know dramatically transforms someone's relationship to their body and most commonly causes them to disassociate from their body. So there are just two very big things that can easily impact female clients in particular, but any client, from being able to determine fullness or not, or feel a lift in a way that you're asking them to be in their bodies and to not even give space for someone to figure out their own experience in their body and just chalk it up to you either care or you don't, you're either passing or you're failing, completely disrespects all of the variables that we all show up with.
Well, I mean, what you kind of are bringing me into another topic that I want to talk to you about. And like, there's lots of great, coaches out there that, you know, there's going to be men that train, both males and females, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a lot of men out there that are trying their best to try to, you know, understand, you know, the mental side for our female clients. And again, I know that's kind of like a generalization, but I guess the question that I was going to pose to you is, you know, as, you know, male coaches, and even for female coaches working with females as well, you know, how can we do a better job at, you know, helping to understand the mental side of all these goals and training for the females that we are working with?
Well, I think just asking better questions rather than making blanket assumptions. And totally. I know that that's hard. I mean, I know even as a social worker, when your whole job is to figure out like every aspect of a person's life and how we can tweak it and move forward better, you get to a point where you kind of start to see patterns and you expect that this person with this set of issues is probably not going to have done X, Y, and Z because of these things. You know, you see patterns, and in any field, you start to joke about them. You know what I mean? Like, it just is work. But I think being very careful that when you're interacting with an individual, that you're fully present with them. And that if they are feeling ashamed about how they ate the week before or not having met whatever goal you've set for them, rather than go into that, hard about how they need to do better or it's a new week, ask what happened, you know? And it sounds like you're being hard on yourself is one of my favorite things to redirect people to, especially if somebody's saying something negative about their body, just because booing them with a compliment rarely boosts someone's confidence and sort of plays into the same thing. But it sounds like you're being hard on yourself. You know, was there something going on this week? Like, ask questions and be interested in what's actually going on with that person so that you can be helpful to them. And then the main thing for me is, whenever possible, using the language that the person that you're working with is using about their body, unless they're using damaging language, like, I don't know, or even like playful language. Like, if somebody was talking about their pooch to me, that word, in like a negative way, then I would want to say, you know, when you say that, for me, that means this area, and use like medically accurate information. Is that what we're talking about? You know, so always using the language that they're using about their body rather than giving them new, particularly negative language. And then if they're using negative language, make sure that you're reframing that in an accurate way and not echoing for them the things that they're saying. So it's just really about trying to keep things neutral and not making assumptions.
Love it. Yeah. And again, I think that there's so many, you know, again, we're in an industry. I hope, you know, a lot of people that are listening to this, if you are, you know, coaches or trainers, like, we got into this not for, not for the millions of dollars that we don't make, but you know, it's to do the best we possibly can to help the people that are coming to us. And I think that is something that a lot of, you know, male coaches are starting to recognize, like, we need to do a better job at, you know, understanding and listening to, you know, our female clients and athletes to make sure that we are interpreting this information better. And then we're also communicating with them in a way that, you know, isn't, you know, negative or isn't like talked downy and stuff like that. Does that make sense?
Yes. So my first experience with a personal trainer, probably why I pulled out the word pooch, is he told me that I needed to lose my pooch.
What?
And this was, yeah. And this was after I had lost 80 pounds and I was feeling better in my body than I ever had in my whole life. And I told him, I've just lost 80 pounds. The reason that I came to him as at a box gym, and it was one where you get like two free sessions, is that I wanted to learn how to lift weights. And I was prepared to pay him, but I was going to do the two free sessions first to make sure he was a good fit. Mm. And he put all of my measure, he didn't listen to a thing I said. He didn't even seem like remotely interested in the fact that I had just lost a significant amount of weight or finding out what had happened, you know, and none of that. He put my measurements into some sort of app on his computer.
That sounds about right.
Moved the body fat percentage down to like 12% or something. Told me that that's my goal. Yeah. And also that it was too bad that my sister was the hot one, was something else that he said to me. And luckily, this was at a time that I was feeling really good about myself, so I did not go home and cry about that. I was just like, yeah, we're not going to do this together. But he had just done everything wrong. He told me, he looked at my body and told me what was wrong with it, and then told me what my goals were, and told me that my sister was hotter than me, which thank goodness is not like a thing between us, but it is for a lot of people. To make matters more sensitive there, my sister, the hot one he was talking about, was struggling with anorexia at the time. And she writes about that online, so that's not private information of hers that I'm sharing. But wow, just like walking through landmines, setting them off, and no idea whatsoever. So then I ran into the one female trainer in the bathroom after that experience, and I was like, what is this? What is happening here? Because the male trainers at that gym would regularly make comments about how my body was changing as I was walking in and out of the gym, totally unsolicited comments about my body. And she said that that is, the way that they do business there. Thankfully this gym went under and I don't think any of these trainers are practicing in town here anymore.
Rightfully so. Yeah.
They worked on belittling their female clients in particular in the way that abusers do in relationships so that they would come back to be buoyed by the same person.
Right.
That's their goal. And she quit. She left and we're friends now. But holy cow, like that. So don't do that. And outside of that, when it comes to like, you know, misstepping in the way that you talk about someone's body, which is really easy to do because everybody's offended by something different, or, you know, just you're going to misstep when you are interacting with somebody about intimate details of their life, including their body. So I think do your best to be respectful. And then also, you know, be gracious. If you can tell by the look on your client's face that you've said something wrong, like say something. Mm. Did I just say something that upset you? I really didn't mean to. And, you know, have some humility about that because that's going to happen. And your willingness to care about that rather than be defensive is going to go really far.
This kind of rolls into a question that superstar Josh Hillis, Josh, what's up? wanted to forward over, and I think this is a great great transition. Is if you could just, you know, talk about you know, how we can do a better job as coaches and trainers, or even just to be honest, like, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that listen to this that are kind of their own coach, and they want to kind of figure out really what their true values or goals are. And he was wondering if you could talk about, you know, just discussing values and goals, with clients. And I'd love to hear you also, you know, talk about how I think that's, again, one of our biggest challenges now is trying to actually find the root of that goal and, you know, dig a couple layers deeper.
Mm-hmm. I think asking why the goal is a really easy and for some people profound place to start, especially in my experience, if you are working with a woman whose goal is weight loss or fat loss. You know, it's such a common state for women to be in seeking to be smaller that to consider why is not a regular question. It's like, because everyone I know is losing weight, because obviously that's my goal on earth. Like, what do you mean why? So to sit with why, regardless of the goal, I think is helpful. It will give you insight into where their head is at and what is important to them. And also for me, when I was still training clients, I didn't get a whole lot of fat loss people, but that's because of the way I write online. So people were looking for something else, but usually no matter how they're feeling about their bodies, there's like a side goal of weight loss. Like that just doesn't seem to ever go away, no matter the size of the person, whatever. And so I was always saying, you know, for whatever your goals are, you get to decide everything for your body. I'm not here to determine that for you, but I want to let you in on that. I have a different goal for you. And it can be in addition to that as well. But I really want you to feel strong while you're here. You know, I really want you to feel really connected with your body so that you feel powerful when you leave a session. And using language like that, you know, it doesn't have to take away from them or tell them that they're approaching their body wrong, which even if you're coming from a really compassionate place, cannot feel good to somebody who's just trying to take control of their own body. So, you know, adding that goal. And then when I was actually working with clients, then as I was working with them, I would make a point to say that looked really strong or like that form was really on point. Can you feel the difference in that from how you were last week? But just like talking about how it looked like they felt, and using words like strong and powerful, as opposed to what tends to be sexualized language or just really all about aesthetic language. And those things are totally fine, but it's dicier when you're the one providing that language for a client, as opposed to them using it for themselves. Just to be clear, I think it's fine to have aesthetic goals and it's fine to want to lose weight. The problem with that goal as a primary goal for women is one, it takes up more headspace than it deserves in their life. And two, oftentimes that goal is reflective of not feeling worthy in the body that they have, or believing that somehow everything about who they are and allowed to be in the world will change once they get to that goal. And I'm sure that you know that that's not a real thing. It's sometimes the process of finding some discipline or really getting into your body. Sometimes those things really do change your life, but just changing your pant size does not change your value in any way. And so that's the trouble with the goal and the reason to ask why, is to find out what's behind that. Because it could be as simple as, you know, I just really feel better when I'm about 10 pounds leaner and I'd like to get back there. Great. And sometimes it's a much deeper issue. And I think that's really valuable information to know about your client going in.
From your experience, I'm curious, like if I was just like guessing, I would have to think, you know, the psychological benefits, like the victories that you can have through improvements in strength would always outweigh the, you know, again, the side effects of like dropping 5 pounds or going down a pant size. Just psychologically, that must be a much bigger win for people.
It was huge. And even if the ultimate goal remains weight loss, and we're talking about this Jane Doe, who is, you know, super confident and, you know, healthy, and she has a healthy goal to lose weight, and there's no controversy around that whatsoever. She is going to be much more likely to hit her goal and even come up with new goals and hit those and exceed everyone's expectations and feel really good about you and herself and the whole world, if she is finding a way to enjoy the process. If she is showing up to a workout because she knows in that time she will access parts of her that she needs in the rest of her day. If the reward is present in the moment and not down the line, that's a client who's going to be more successful too. You know, so even for incredibly selfish reasons and wanting happy clients who talk about you and are successful in their goals, getting your clients to focus on what they're getting in the moment and what they're taking from each workout will just make for happier clients and people who are more excited and better at following up in their goals because they're realizing that there's value present right then and not just when the scale moves.
I want to talk to you about, I mean, this is almost like maybe even ground we don't need to tread, but you know, talking about the like movement of body positivity, and it's been outstanding to see it. It's been so great, you know, to have like I mean I think maybe the most popular example in media right now like might be Amy Schumer, I guess, but she's been outstanding. And you know, it's been odd. I guess it's odd, but it's also like, of course it would be. More than anything, it seems to be men fighting back against this, not women. You see, you know, the terrible world of the internet where we have today, where you know men can say dumb things and then run away. no, for real. I mean, it's. I guess it goes on both sides for any argument, but it's sure. It's a world where we live in of like hot takes where people can just, you know, say something and then not have to defend it, or they just block anyone that disagrees with them. And I'm kind of just like curious if you've like, if there, it's just like an odd trend where, again, you have, you know, women where this is starting to be an incredible movement, but then there's like men saying like, oh, you know, now all you're saying is like, you're allowing yourselves to be unhealthy. You're allowing yourselves to, you know, continue to have like poor, you know, health habits and stuff like that. Where do you go with like a discussion such as that?
Well, typically, if someone is
because I think like women are going to have to like deal with this stuff. Like, you know, if they say they're proud of the way that they look, that, you know, there's going to be some asshole that says right. something, you know, different.
My most common comments in terms of people who are disagreeing with what I have to say or don't like what I have to say, my most common negative comments are that I'm fat and ugly and should shut up. That I am utilizing this work to justify the state of my body, or men letting me know whether or not they would be interested in having sex with me in my current state. That is not useful information to me.
It's not useful information to anyone. Like who the hell? It's literally the Jim Carrey thing from the Truman Show where he looks is like, what are you talking about? Who the hell are you talking to?
Right. No, that's not awesome. And I don't know if it's because my work has been so focused on women primarily, that the men who show up there, unless they're just trolling, are really looking into to have more insight into women, or are men who relate to me, which happens pretty often as well. Hmm. But my experience has actually been different than that, that the primary people that I have experienced being really angry at my message have just been other women. And that is not me saying any generalizations about who's the bigger culprit here.
Of course.
But just in my little microcosm of my experience, it's been women. And to me, what I at least have deduced from what I'm experiencing in a lot of those scenarios, and of course every individual's system of operation is different, but what I've come to in a lot of those scenarios is that my saying that I am comfortable in my body as is, that is important to me to wake up every day and like myself, and that whatever state my body is in on a random Friday in December cannot determine how I show up in the world or what my value is. Mm-hmm. My saying that feels to some women like a direct assault on everything that they've been taught to believe about themselves. And especially if they have invested, as most of us have, a lot of time and energy, even to just worrying about this.
Right.
Even right. saying that it's not important to me feels like a big screw you to where they put a lot of their value and time and energy and worth, especially if they've done the work to get to a space where they're like holding on to, like, I finally got to this particular body type and I'm winning. How dare you say I'm not winning? Which is not the point of what I do, but it makes sense to me that somebody would feel so threatened by that. And that is what I would call internalized misogyny, which is the work that I do, is in dismantling that. Because a lot of the body positivity movement, and there's different facets of it, and there is a sentiment within it and everything that we're all arguing, like fitness people are all arguing about, you know, what the best workout is or how you're supposed to eat or whatever, which is not really the case. And sometimes it is and whatever, but there's different facets that have different hashtags and care about different things and prioritize different things. Right. But one of the things that I see a lot that is not a part of my own work is pointing to Photoshop and pointing to fitness models and pointing to the media and magazines and celebrity culture and saying that this is the reason why we hate ourselves. And what I work on instead is what is internalized, because even though, and I was raging against that machine in college, I've been a card-carrying feminist since I knew what it was. I found my high school like English journal the other day where I introduced myself to my teacher as a feminist.
That's awesome.
And I did slam poetry in college about the beauty myth. Like, I get that fight, and I'm down for it. And at the end of the day, when I was really looking at myself and what it meant to be my daughter's mother, I realized that I had learned to hate myself from my mom, not from Cosmopolitan magazine, not from Photoshop, not from television, but from my mother. And of course, those messages come from everywhere, but I thought my mother made the sun come up. And she was the most beautiful woman I had ever seen. And she was constantly belittling herself because of she didn't feel like she measured up to other moms, or if she ate M&Ms and not like the perfect portion of salad or whatever. And exercise was a punishment, and food was good or bad and determined how good she had been that day. And that is where I learned that. And so the most powerful thing I can do in terms of changing that is working on that in myself. Because the truth is, when I'm at home feeling like poop, it is me in my mirror being the bully. It's me. And we could wave a magic wand and take away everything about the media and the culture that makes women feel bad about themselves, and we would still be in the same state, because we agree, because we perpetuate it, because we teach it in our homes. It's like a 101 course from birth when we start saying that our children ruined our bodies, and we say it to them, you know? So there's different angles, and I'm happy that there are so many different activists doing different kinds of work. But for me, it is all about looking at that internalized stuff and changing your conversations with other women and having a ripple effect outward that way. That went several places, didn't it?
No, I love it. No, I love it, because it goes back to another thing that I wanted to talk to you about. Is like, all right, well, you know what? Some people could be listening to this, be like, all right, well, where do I start to deconstruct this and, you know, begin to, you know, whether the, you know, the concept is, you know, loving me where I'm at right now, or looking in the mirror and not like being hypercritical of everything that I see.
Right. Well, you know, when it comes to most goals, we don't prescribe to that idea. Like, when someone enrolls in college, they don't think, now I'm going to hate myself for 4 years because I don't have a degree until I get a degree.
Right.
You know?
That's a good analogy.
Like, that's not the way that we approach most goals. And I always think about just like getting on MapQuest. If you have some place you'd like to go, you can't like be in complete denial as to your current GPS location and figure out how to get where you're going, you know? So it doesn't have to be the most positive place to start. It doesn't have to be, all right, I felt disgusting and now I am ultimately beautiful. And it doesn't have to come without future goals. I mean, you can do all of that at once. But for me, part of it was feeling really disassociated from my body and trying to get back in there. But the first step that I took, and I wrote a book about this as is, because there's a lot to undo, but the first effective step I took was that I just stopped saying aloud negative things about my body. And in that small shift in mindfulness, I had a long time to deal with, realizing how often I was doing that and in how many ways I was doing that. You know, I'd wake up in the morning and say awful things in the mirror. I would sit down to a meal, and if it was with someone else, you know, overly explain how much I had already eaten or how little I had already eaten that day so that they wouldn't judge me for my lunch, which is probably not was going to happen anyway. Little comments, even to strangers, either justifying or explaining my body in some way, just all day long. And in that shift, was able to start to realize how often that was happening, that it was me that was doing it and who I was doing it with. And then my shift from there was to just say more neutral things to myself, because as much as I want to wake up every day feeling like I have the magnetism of Beyonce, that is just not a real reality. It's not a reality. I told you when we first got on here before we started recording, I'm having a little bit of a rough day. And part of that is what's going on with my physical body today. And that's okay. You know, this isn't a linear thing. You don't reach the holy land. In terms of confidence. But if you were saying something really negative to yourself, the easiest shift from there is just something neutral, you know, something objective. So I started with telling myself that this is what I look like on Tuesday, or this is what you look like on Wednesday, which doesn't sound really powerful, but it was an extremely big shift from you're disgusting and don't deserve love and attention. Like that's huge. And then from there, I started to find little things that I could like about myself. You know, the thing that I always ask myself that can be a powerful tool, and I found particularly for women, but also for men, is whenever I am beating myself up, I don't ask myself what I deserve in that moment, because I'm not in a place where I'm being very kind to me. So instead, I ask myself what I would want my daughter to do and say if she found herself in the same scenario. You know, if I feel like I have backslid or something towards a goal or whatever it is, I'm having a not so confident day. I give those exact parameters to my daughter and say, what would I want her to do? What would I want her to say? And then I think about the fact that I really am in real time role modeling that for her all the time. And if my highest self knows what I want for my daughter, then I believe I deserve that too. And so sometimes talking myself off a ledge is just being really objective. Like, yeah, you did. You totally screwed that up. And the sun is going to come out tomorrow. And so this is just what Tuesday looks like. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be all positive all the time. And in terms of my own journey with my body, I just had some photos taken for Christmas for my husband. So like those kind of pictures. And there are some things that I'm not like super in love with about my body right now. And they don't determine how I show up in the world. Like those things can coexist. I don't have to have extreme love and happiness about every single part of my body to accept it, you know, and to care about it and to find things that I like about it and to have a sense of humor about it and to not put all of my worth in that basket. Does that make sense?
It totally does. And I want to give a shout out to the book because I bought it. Is a 21-day practice for finding a home and peace in your skin. You can pick it up from your local Amazon.com website. I mean, they ship globally too. And if you order it by the time that you hear this, I don't know if it will arrive before Christmas, but if you want to get it for 2017, you'll have a great book to start your year. I want to circle back to the concept of empathy, because this is something that I've been talking to a lot of coaches, about, because I could, like, obviously this is something that has become, you know, it's been awesome to see this become more of a factor in the discussions that we have with the people that we work with, and even between, you know, ourselves as coaches. But you know, this is something that I was talking with, you know, another coach, Sarah Polacco, about. But like with empathy, one of the things that I'm trying to get a better understanding of is if like this is something that needs to be experienced. Like if we need to have kind of gone through like the discomfort and the pain of being in a certain state, you know, ourselves, to be able to be empathetic to someone else that is going to be going through that state, or can someone that has been, let's just use like the perfect human being that was genetically gifted and has always been in incredible shape their whole life, and they got into the industry, and you know, it's awesome if you got into the industry. You know, but sometimes they go into the industry just because, like, yeah, this is something that's always come really easy to me. I've always been in great shape. And, you know, I can be like someone that can also help. But can is empathy something that can be learned, or is that something that we need to like almost have through going through, like, you know, me in high school going through the trauma being just like called the worst things for being 210 pounds as a 15-year-old to be able to understand like what it's like for someone to go through that today?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, I'm not sure. I will say that in my experience, primarily working with women, the women who identify as empaths and who are, which is like an extreme feeling of empathy at all times that you have to sort of like learn how to set boundaries around, are people who have experienced a tremendous amount of pain.
That's and fascinating. So, that like, we might need to come back to that, but like you've talked with people, and I guess I don't even know if I've experienced this, but maybe I have heard of it before. But you know, people that are so empathetic that it is almost to their detriment, and the people that they're trying to help.
Oh my gosh, yes. And another thing people identify as HSPs, highly sensitive people. But it's the ability, which can be a superpower so long as you are in control of it, to actually feel how someone else is feeling in your body. And to some degree, everybody has this. So like if you've ever, it's energetic, which I know like some science-y fitness people don't like to talk about, but energy is a real thing, right? So like if you are sitting in a room and everybody's like having a good time and having some punch or whatever, and somebody comes and slams the door and stomps out, it takes everyone's breath away in the room and everything feels different. You know, because that person's energy has just come into the space and you feel it. Or even just like the sort of tension in your body that you feel, or the discomfort if somebody is sobbing and you're the only other person there. You know, like there is that's a real thing that we all know what it's like to experience everything changing when somebody comes in with a big mood, right? So there are people who can experience that in very big ways all of the time. And I do identify as one of these people, but I also have learned to set very clear boundaries with myself. And so I can choose when to do that and when not to. But yeah, that's another struggle for people and people who identify as highly sensitive or empaths right now, with all of the turmoil that's happening in the world, regardless of your personal views. I think it's easy to say that this is a really difficult time for a lot of people.
For sure.
So there are people like that for whom just getting out of bed is a real challenge right now, which actually goes back to your empathy thing. So, I mean, I also don't believe in having to have experienced the exact same thing as someone else, or even like trauma to have empathy for trauma, right? Because if you haven't experienced a whole lot of pain in your life, like my 8-year-old daughter, then for her, the things that she's experiencing at school when another girl is being mean to her, which is what's happening right now, really does feel like the end of the world. She's feeling that really big because there's nothing in her life to like right-size that pain. So I think even if you haven't had a similar experience, if you can try to reframe it just for yourself as something that you have experienced, can create that empathy. It's something that I do quite a bit when I'm thinking about other marginalized groups of people and the way people approach correcting people when they screw up or the way they approach protest or whatever. If I'm feeling uncomfortable about it, then what I do is I turn around that scenario to where I'm in the other seat and ask myself, if this was a male-female thing and these were women doing this exact same thing and asking men for the exact same thing, how do I feel about that? So that I can try to put myself in those shoes. The only thing not to do is then to take that information that you've done in your head and share that with that person. Because unless you have the context of an intimate relationship where they can tell you that that's not the same thing, to use a really big example, I have a friend who lost a baby a couple of years ago, and there is nothing in my life that would have been appropriate to share with her and say, you know, I sort of understand because my dog passed away this week, right? So you can have this whole discussion in your head and create an empathetic view for that person when it comes to fitness. It might be thinking about how that trainer who you described as always being really athletic and this really comes easy to, surely there's something that doesn't come easy to that person. Did they ever feel badly because they were talking to an expert and they didn't know the first thing? Did they ever feel sheepish to raise their hand in science class because that was, you know, where have you had to show up as the new person who didn't know what was going on and felt out of place? That's theoretically a more universal experience. And then take that lens to have some empathy for that client.
Fascinating. Totally. And like, I mean, that it kind of spurs off to you know, another kind of subset of that is like, you know, does it just, I totally agree with you. Like, they don't need to have that similar experience, but do they need to have been, you know, living and have like not grown up, but also, you know, living for a certain amount of time in an environment where empathy is something that is like, I don't know if it's like the right word is acceptable. Yeah. Or valued, or like, you know, not growing up in a place where it's like, you know, just toughen up. Like you gotta toughen up. It's all on you.
I mean, I think that that can change, and I think that I've experienced that change within people. But the other thing I would say is that, you know, if that really isn't your strong suit, if being empathetic is just not, it's not your thing, and when you are confronted with a client that feels uncomfortable and you're going to have to do some hand-holding and that's not your bag, then don't take those clients. You know, I mean, I don't think that makes you a terrible person. Maybe you're the athlete who works with athletes.
Right.
And you don't have the patience or time for other people. But I think that it would be better for everyone, not the least of which yourself, to be honest about what and who you're willing to take on, so that you're not damaging anyone or exhausting yourself doing something that you're not good at. And to that end, I do some like interpersonal coaching stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm very clear on my website and in general, about being clear that I don't work with people who are experiencing trauma right now. I do not work people through trauma, and I don't work with people who aren't in a position where they feel ready to move, you know, who are choosing to be in a cycle or are just not ready to move out of it. You know, a good example of that would be grief. Like if you are really just like, no, I'm in my grief, which is a totally valid experience, and that's where you're at, then that's not somebody I work with. I only work with people who feel like they're sort of at a crossroads and they're ready to move and they're not sure which way. And that's the people that I work with, because it does take so much of my time and energy to do the kind of work I do with individuals that I'm very clear about who I'm looking to work with. And I think that's fine, you know? So maybe you're not an empath and everything I just said made you roll your eyes. Then you go work with jocks who are like down with you, and don't accidentally be mean to somebody else because you didn't have the patience for them to begin with.
Okay. No, that's totally okay. That's okay. Yeah. No, you're hitting on all the, okay. I'm pumped. I'm now pumped to get back to work even after this call to continue working on that stuff, because that's like, this is the stuff that's like super fascinating to me right now, because like, we obviously don't need like, there isn't like a robot that we can like mass produce as like the ultimate coach. Like,
no,
you know what I mean? So,
And somebody who like really needs someone to hold their hand,
right?
And somebody who is trying to jump higher are probably really different clients, and that's fine. You know, who want really different coaches. Like the person who's only there to get a higher jump probably doesn't want you to ask multiple questions about how their day was yesterday, or maybe they do. I mean, I'm overgeneralizing people here, but you know, it's okay to be specific about your own capacity to work and who that's with. But you though, obviously to me seem like such a compassionate person. And so I think if you specifically are ever worried about not being empathetic enough, another just really great tool is to ask someone how you can help them.
Totally.
So if you have a client coming in and saying like, I know that I was supposed to do two other workouts and like try to add some green vegetables, but I did none of it and I feel awful and I hate everything. And you don't relate to that experience at all, like just an example, then I would say, you know, I feel that you're beating yourself up and I don't want that. And I'm also not really sure how best to help you. So what would you want from me? What would be most helpful to you moving forward? And if you don't know now, maybe that's something we can think about for next week, you know, and you notice how you're feeling before you start doing some of these behaviors that you're not proud of, and we can see how I can maybe intervene or not, you know, but let me know how I can help you. Even just that question is such a relief for some people. It's my favorite thing when somebody asks how they can help me. And usually the answer is I just need to help myself, but man, does it feel good just to have somebody say, I don't know what to do, but man, do I want to help.
Totally. It can be so powerful. Like it's, okay. Do you have time for like three more questions?
Totally.
Okay, because I have there's some three really awesome questions that I still have yet to ask. So
yeah,
I selfishly just took up the last 15 minutes for myself. So, okay, someone named Molly Galbraith. No, I'm just kidding. Molly Galbraith had actually a really good question. Molly, what's up? Her question, or the what she wanted to pose, is how to help clients and people understand that they don't have to, quote, hate themselves to be motivated to change their bodies, health, and habits. You hit on this a little bit before, but if you'd like to expand on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, that's just not the way that people find success in anything. There's a difference between I'm trying to find the right words, and I'm not sure I'm going to find perfect ones because I'm trying to say something that works for everyone's experience in their body, and that's not a thing. So for myself, when thinking about myself, if there's something about my body that I would like to change in some way, I don't have to belittle myself. I don't have to say nasty things to myself. I don't have to encourage myself, air quotes, which we actually have science that says that that's not shaming yourself into change. It's not effective. But I don't have to do that to make some like real loving moves towards changing something about myself. That is totally possible. The idea that the options are hate yourself into beautiful submission or love yourself and give up, quote unquote, on anything that you might do that's positive for yourself is just absolutely ridiculous. We live in a world with a lot more shades of gray than that. We are multifaceted humans. And even if you set an amazing goal, you're probably going to have some grace for yourself at some point because life happens and that week might not pan out anything like you thought it was going to in ways that you cannot manipulate to get in those arm workouts that you had meticulously planned. Like we just have to find a little bit more grace for ourselves. And there's no reason that that can't include doing anything that you want with your body. It just does not have to come from a place of hating ourselves. That is ingrained. That is taught. It is spoon-fed to us from the womb. And it's the only reason that we think it makes sense because we don't tackle any other goal in the same way.
Love it. Love it. Kent wanted to ask, you know, ways men can be unintentionally perpetuating sexism, if you could discuss that.
Well, the most common things in my life, I guess, are using condescending language. So like calling me sweetie or sweetheart when I don't have that sort of relationship with them. So just like a general question to ask yourself is if you would interact with a man in the exact same way. Mm-hmm. And if you wouldn't, then that might be offensive.
You know? Right.
Because I get like – and I give – old men who are not like overtly sexualizing me a pass sometimes on that because I'm like, okay, I'm like 12 to you and you're just treating me like a child.
And they're stuck in 1952.
Yeah, but you are old and on your way out and not everyone has to give you a pass, but I'm going to get the intention here and not give you a speech because I need to save it for today. But that kind of thing. Also, explaining things to women is a really common occurrence for us, even if we are the expert in the scenario. But the belief that like yielding a penis means that women are just waiting for you to explain everything to them is a weird experience to explain until it happens all day to you. And that's another thing is when a woman is telling you about an experience that she's had, and specifically if she's telling you about a sexist experience she's had, telling her that that was not her experience is not helpful. So those are the most common things that I personally experience. But I think that we are living in a time that is – tumultuous in part because so many people with so many different identities, women included, are feeling more comfortable talking about what their experience is and being clear about what they have learned about themselves and what you have learned about them and how you perpetuate those things and how it negatively impacts them. And so I think it's a tricky time for everyone to navigate because the autopilot that we were handed and the education we were given around this stuff sucked. Yeah. We're getting a new one like every day. And so even if you do misstep in those places, the most important thing to me is that you care at all rather than be defensive, which is my go-to. I mean, if somebody tells me that I have misstepped and said something wrong or offensive, I immediately feel defensive. And I'm just like, I just sit with that in myself. Or if it's my friend, I'll be like, okay, I'm feeling defensive, but keep talking. I'm sorry. And then just process that and be willing to be wrong and not do it again next time, you know, because it's going to happen. You're going to say something that you heard your grandpa say your whole life and didn't even realize was a thing. And then you'll learn and do better, you know, but the willingness to listen and actually hear what somebody else's experience is and maybe change your own behavior because of something that they tell you, that's gold, you know, because we're not going to get this stuff perfectly at all.
And I made sure not to start the show with a showstopper, but I'm going to finish it with a showstopper. And that's from Jen Sinkler. Great question. Well, I think it's a great question. I mean, I'm curious to hear the answer, but Jen said, ask her to talk about her phrase, queen shit. It's a game changer for people. She's usually talking to women, but no doubt it's applicable to any gender who burn it at both ends and sacrifice their own health and well-being in the process.
Right. Queen shit is what I'm doing today. So I'm on end of my period. I am not feeling happy with the world or, you know, I'm just bloated. Let's be honest. I'm just going to tell you all the things. And also, Kevin, I so appreciate that I'm talking to you about my period. You're not being weird about it. You like get all the feminist cool points for that. But I'm wearing a fuzzy robe. I'm taking a float later because I have a trade with a local place that does float. I had a bath today, but I am doing everything that I need to do to really take care of myself. And I joke that I am a lady of luxury. It's not a money situation, to be honest. My husband and I live just above the poverty level in Kansas, which is a very nice life for us. I don't want for anything, but this is not about me being rich and can do whatever I want to. It's about me believing that I deserve every day my own care and that today that looks like croutons for lunch and tomorrow it will look totally different. Queen shit for me means actually acknowledging that you deserve your own time, care, and attention, whatever that looks like, every day. And it's usually what I end a speech on because I'm asking women to examine the way that they talk about themselves and the way that they talk about each other and the way that they speak up and actually like dare to have passion in a world that will tell them that they are too aggressive or don't even sound like they mean it. All with the guys that eventually I would like to see more women fearlessly leading. And these are the things that I see in the way. So I like to cap that off with the final way to defy all of the things that have been asked of you is just really take care of yourself in an absolutely luxurious way, whatever that looks like to you. And for me, that is weightlifting. And for me, that is sometimes going for a run and dancing in my living room and turning off my phone and not paying attention to any of my notifications sometimes. And just generally waking up every day with the belief that I am worthy of me and that I don't have to put all of my worth in how I care for others, but that I can actually extend that care to myself. That is queen shit. And that is what I hope that I can get other people to aspire to in their own lives, even if it's just because we are kinder to each other, because we've actually fulfilled our own needs before going out into the world and greeting one another.
Absolutely love it. That's the best way to finish this episode. But I need to ask you, are you a viewer of the Parks and Recreation television show?
I am.
Okay. So I think like what that is like, you know, expanding that one day a year where when you treat yourself.
Yes.
and doing it every day, but do it in, you know, small, maybe smaller bites. You don't have to drive, get like a Lexus and rent that and buy expensive food named after celebrities. Like you can just kind of, you know, do a little bit every day. And I love that.
Yeah, well, for me, it's for a long time been about small indulgences. In my family, my husband just went back to school and it's been out for about a year, but we made a lot of sacrifices together thoughtfully to make that happen. And so there wasn't a lot of time or money behind it when I was supporting us. And so the monetary indulgence for me a lot of times was just to go buy myself nail polish. Which is not everybody's thing, but you can get nail polish for $1 and then give myself a little manicure, or, you know, give myself the gift of either going to the gym or acknowledging that this morning my body does not want to go to the gym, and just spend that time laying on the couch breathing. You know, it doesn't have to be a trip to the Bahamas because hashtag YOLO, you know, it's whatever you have access to and time for. And whenever I don't feel like I am worthy of that, which is also, you know, just a regular part of being human, again, I ask myself what I want to teach my daughter. Mm. And, you know, I think that if I gave all of my life to her in the way that, you know, my mother did, bless her, I have an amazing mom. But if I did that, what I would teach her is that her life matters until she has someone to care for, and then it doesn't. And that her role is to be a martyr. And that's not what I want for her. And even if I devoted my life to taking exquisite care of her, who would take care of her when I'm gone? Because if all is right with the world, I will go first. And so for me, even when it's not about me, it has to be about me, because I want to know that my daughter will always take exquisite care of herself because I showed her how it was done.
It has been an absolute pleasure to talk with you today. And I know, like, seriously, this has made my day, and it's going to make my weekend. And I know it is not going to be the last of our chats, but before we do wrap up, you know, I want to give people a heads up. You know, you can go to iamerinbrown.com. You can, like I said before, head over to Amazon. It'd be a great, you know, gift for yourself. You know, treat yourself today and buy a book, you know, a 21-day practice for finding a home and peace in your skin. And also, you are on social media a little bit. Good. Twitter game is not
super right. Oh, my God, my Twitter game.
before we do go, you always have awesome stuff coming up. Like, what do you have anything coming up that the audience should keep an eye or an ear out for?
Well, there is a second book out, and I'm hoping to have a third in the spring. And then also we will be, and all of that information would be at iamerinbrown.com as soon as it's released. And also we should be releasing the dates and location for this year's I Am Power retreat. Very soon, which is a retreat for anyone who identifies as a woman. We do tactile fighting skills, but also talk about dealing with being an empath or addressing emotions if you never do. But we address power from multiple angles, and it is transformative is the word that everyone who has come has used. And so that information is at iempowerretreat.com, or also just following me on social media, except Twitter. My Twitter is for voting for The Voice. You just can't. I don't understand what 140 characters are for, unless that's like a way to break up an essay. That's like, I don't. I'm not quips. Yeah, I need more space. I need to breathe. So Facebook and Instagram and even Snapchat are better places to find me.
See, I mean, that's one step. I just never did the Snapchat thing. I think I'm gonna retire on Instagram and Twitter. I think that's as far as I can go.
It's so fun. You would know all about the croutons I was having for lunch already. You could see the robe that I'm wearing.
I'm just not cool enough to be on Instagram, you know?
I think you are, and it sounds like you're being really hard on yourself, Kevin.
Maybe a little bit. Maybe a little bit. But it's just like, you know, it's how we measure ourselves these days. We measure ourselves in the amount of followers, and I just don't know if I can, you know, make it again on another platform, but...
Quality over quantity. And can I just pitch Snapchat to you? You can totally edit this out if you don't want to have it on there.
Let's pitch it to everyone. Are you an investor in Snapchat?
No, I just like, I like Snapchat because particularly as somebody that does have a following. But I think post-election, just everything that we put up is done very carefully and thoughtfully. And I think that that is smart, you know, or at least that's my experience in the way that I work. And so I'm really thinking ahead to like, how would somebody respond to this negatively? Am I saying this the way that I want to say it? And just really being very thoughtful about how I curate my online space. Snapchat is not that. There are no comments added to it. It is like 8 seconds long per snap. And so it really is just what I was doing. I like to have 8 second videos of me walking out of my child's school listening to Brick House. And I like show the dance workout video that I'm doing. And today I like to show that I was eating croutons for lunch because that's what I'm doing. And it is funny and it's quick and it is not a platform for serious discussion usually. Sometimes it is. But it's just a place that is not curated and is messy and is gone in 24 hours. And it's a nice uplifting place to be. And I actually heard, and I don't know how this research can already be done, so I made it out of my butt, but I actually heard that it is the only social media platform that is actually shown to improve your mood. So there's something. How about that?
Because I like that. That's a pretty good sales pitch, because usually it's, you know, people spend too much time on Facebook and they feel terrible about themselves because
yes, this just makes me feel so happy.
All right. I have an account. I'll see if I can figure out how to like download it again on my phone and go from there.
You can put a duck filter on your face and talk about what you're doing, and it's hilarious. It's just, why isn't that the best thing ever? It is.
I think that might be how we just transition to do the podcast starting next year. After 10 years of recording for like an hour, I'm just going to do it in 8 second blocks on Snapchat, because that's where the kids are.
That's amazing. Do that.
That would be a hell of a project, but we'll see what we can do. Until then, you guys have plenty of things to go and check out. And depending on where you hear this, I hope you guys have a happy holiday and have a great start. I think we all agree we can just, you know, control, alt, delete, and get rid of 2016 altogether.
Bye.
Let's just dump that and let's start a new document, and hopefully we can have some incredible things happen next year. All we can do is do our best, I guess. Aaron, thank you so much. This has been an absolute blast to talk to you today.
So wonderful. Thank you, Kevin.
That's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget to check out fitcast.network. You can also follow all the stuff that I'm doing at Kevin Larrabian. Don't forget, IamAaronBrown.com. That's going to be a great help for you guys to go to. And if you are a Patreon supporter, thank you so much, because you are helping me produce this show every single week. We'll catch you next time. Take care.